We could have no higher aspiration than to continue to look to the Lord, as the song says, putting our trust in Him. We appreciate very much your presence for the Lord's Day morning service. We're in the midst of the holiday season. Of course, Thanksgiving coming up, and then Christmas coming up, and then New Year's coming up. This is known as the holiday season. Maxine and I solicit your prayers this week. We plan to be out in Oklahoma and Texas for a few days during the Thanksgiving. We solicit your prayers, as we always do, and as we should pray for others who might be traveling at this time. We are glad that we have brethren here who are willing to carry on the work of the Lord. Brother Jerry Trimble will be filling the pulpit next week. Jerry will do a good job. He showed me his outline, very provocative lesson, and I've heard Jerry speak enough to know he'll do a good job in the pulpit next Sunday, where I'll be gone. Brother Conley Keenum will take care of the class, teach the class on Sunday morning, and of course we'll look forward to that also. I haven't been out of town now in several years, and I thought, well, I need to get out maybe for a few days. And so I look forward to that, and I, as I said, we solicit your prayers in this venture, visiting some of the relatives out in that part of the country. You know, when Paul wrote to the Thessalonian brethren, they were worried. Sometimes brethren worry about things. They get concerned about it. And the thing they were concerned about is their folks who had died. They thought that there was no hope for them. And another thing that concerned them in 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter, was the coming of the Lord. They thought it was imminent, that the coming of Jesus just around the corner. The Apostle Paul writes unto them and tells them that he didn't say that, and he didn't teach it. Neither did any of the apostles teach that the coming of Jesus was at hand. I don't know how it got started, but that got started in the church, and it was worrying some of the brethren, or they were concerned about it. Matter of fact, in this chapter, he says that Christ won't come until the son of perdition is revealed. And the son of perdition evidently is a pretty bad fellow. And there's a difference of opinion about who the son of perdition is. And frankly, I think it's the pontiff, which happened in 606. But now, there are different ideas about that. And I don't plan to talk about that today, about who that son of perdition is. But that Paul said it'd have to come before the Lord's going to return a second time. But he did say, give some of the traits of this son of perdition, and I want to begin reading, as was read in your hearing, 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter, beginning with verse 10, and it reads like this: "And with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish," he's still talking about this son of perdition, about being a deceiver, and he says, "in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth that they might be saved." I want to sort of take these things one verse at a time and talk a little bit about them, because they're very important. The first thing that I notice here is that certain people are perishing. The word perish is an interesting word, but it is used synonymously with being lost. You remember in the book of Luke 13:3, Jesus said, "Except you repent, you shall all likewise perish." The word perish there simply means that you'll be lost eternally, or, as we say, you will go to hell. And that's just what it means. And here he says these people are perishing. Some use the participial form and say that these people who are being led astray are perishing. And he says the reason they are perishing is because they do not love the truth that they might be saved. That's very interesting. I've never preached a sermon on this, but I want to talk about lovers of truth. Or who is it that loves the truth, however you want to word it. And I often think, what is he talking about? You know, truth, we all talk about truth, but sometimes I think we don't really know what the word really means. When Jesus was on earth and before he was crucified, he told Pilate, he said, "I have come to bear witness of truth." And Pilate said, "What is truth?" Evidently, Pilate was a cynic. He thought that truth was relative. And that you can't find it. And I've talked to a lot of people, even in the realms of religion, who believe that doctrine. They say you can't find truth. There's just no way you can find it. I don't believe that. I believe you can find the truth, because if you can't find the truth and you can't know the truth, you can't be saved, because Jesus said, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Free from what? Well, free from sin. Therefore, if you can know the truth, you got to understand the truth, and therefore it's available. A lot of folks don't believe that. But I need to talk a little bit about truth. I don't think Jesus meant all truth. You know, when you talk about something true, the antithesis of truth is error or false doctrine, something that's a lie or that's false. There could be truth about science. There could be truth about mathematics. There could be truth about English. There could be truth about history. There could be truth about a lot of things. And I don't think you have to know all the truth in order to be saved. So I want to clarify that. When Jesus said, "Ye shall know the truth," what did he mean? Well, if you study the context, you'd know what he meant. All you have to know is the truth that'll make you free from sin, which is the plan of salvation, how to be saved. And I believe everybody knows that. I don't believe everybody knows all truth. If a man knew all truth, he'd know everything. He couldn't learn anything. He'd know it all. I don't believe that. But there's truth in different areas, is my point. But you have to figure out, well, what did the Lord mean here about not loving the truth, and what did Paul mean, and then what did the Lord mean? Ladies and gentlemen, when you study the context, what they're talking about is you've got to know the plan of salvation. You've got to know how to be saved. And that's what Jesus meant when he said the truth will make you free. And I believe that you can know the truth, not about everything, but the truth of the gospel. I received a call from Brother Rufus Clifford's grandson. He's a preacher, gospel preacher. Brother Rufus Clifford, I believe he held us a meeting here one time. He's dead now, but he had a son who is a doctor. Dr. Clifford lives in Columbia, Tennessee, and then he has a son who is a preacher, and he's the one that called me. And he said, "Brother Hoagland, I'm in a quandary. I don't know what to do." He said, "The brethren called me in and kind of worked me over." I said, "What about?" He said, "They told me not to ever say that I was preaching the truth." Said, "You tell them you're preaching what you believe to be the truth." And he says, "I don't know what to do. I'd like your advice." I said, "Well, I believe you preach both. You tell them both. Now, if they say that you can't know the truth, then the brethren are just like infidels. You know, when my brethren had come and call me in and tell me that I couldn't say I was preaching the truth, then they are evidently implying that I can't understand it. And you know, we're all in trouble if we can't understand the truth. But you've got to understand what part of the truth he's talking about. It doesn't mean mastering the Bible. It means what to do to be saved. You see, people don't think. The truth about the matter is, and those brethren made a mistake by telling that preacher that, and they had him all worked up and disturbed. Not only do I preach the truth, I preach what I believe to be the truth. And if I can't find the truth, then I can't be saved, and neither can you. You ever think about that? A person argued with me that truth is so relative you can't know it. Jesus said you can know it. You know, I believe Jesus. I believe you can know the truth. And I believe you can know the difference in truth and error if you study to show yourself approved to God. And so when Paul says here in this text, the reason these people are damned is they don't love the truth. Now, there's a difference in the truth and loving the truth. The truth's out there, but not everybody loves it. Now, you just think about that. And I've never gone into deep thought about this, but this sort of got my attention. Do I really love the truth? And by the truth, I mean the truth that has to do with my salvation. I'm not talking about truth in science or medicine. That's not what I'm talking about. So I want to make it clear to you. And there are certain things, even in the Bible, which are true that I don't have to know and that I can't know. Let me give you an example. When Paul was caught up into the third heaven, he was given a thorn in the flesh. And the Lord said the reason he gave him the thorn in the flesh is so that he wouldn't be exalted above measure. What is the truth about his thorn in the flesh? What was it? What was it? Someone says, well, I think it was poor eyesight. Another man says, well, I think that Paul was a sort of a weak man. But that's all guess work. You couldn't prove that. I don't think I have to know what his thorn in the flesh is. And I don't think I have to know the truth about what his thorn in the flesh is. I don't have to know that truth. That has nothing to do with my salvation. You see, what I'm trying to get over to you is you don't have to know the truth about everything, but you've got to know the truth to make it to heaven. I guess that's what I'm trying to tell you. Another thing I don't know, Nicodemus, a Jewish aristocrat, came to Jesus by night, and he said, Master, we know you're a teacher sent of God because no man could do these things except God be with him. Jesus said, you must be born again. Why did Nicodemus come by night? What's the truth about that? Someone says, well, I think he didn't want the rulers to see him, but that's your guess. You don't know that. That's just what you think about why he came by night. I don't know why he came by night. I don't know the truth about why he came by night. Someone says, then you're saying you don't have to know all truth in order to be saved. That's what I'm trying to say. And that's the truth. That's the truth. You don't have to know all truth. Some things even in the Bible you can't know. But you have to know everything to do to get you to heaven. Now that truth you have to know. And that's what Paul was talking about here. That's what the Lord was talking about. That's the truth you've got to know. It's indispensable with your salvation. Are you listening to me? You know, sometimes we pass over words and we just play with them. We don't get down to the root meaning of things. And we toss these words around here and there. As I told you in the class, the word church, ecclesia, we'll say, let the church do this, and people don't tell what they mean by the church. It's used four different ways in the Bible. You have to explain to people what you're talking about. And that would depend, you see, when a word is used in different senses. Now, you don't have to know all truth, but you have to know enough truth to get you to heaven. And here he says that these people, the reason they're damned, and they are damned, they're perishing, they're going to go to hell. If you want plain language, that's where they're headed. They're headed straight to hell because they don't love the truth. But someone says, preacher, how do I show my love for truth? Now, that's another subject. When do you love the truth? That's a good question. That's a good question. And someone says, do you think some people claim they love the truth when they really don't? Oh, yes, I think that's true. You know, you have to really probe into the innermost recesses of your soul and ask yourself, do I really love the truth? The only way that I can answer that is give you some Bible examples. And I think I can define it better by some examples of someone who loves the truth. Let's take the man Paul. Saul was known one time. I believe Paul loved the truth. Paul said he lived in all good conscience before God until the day he was converted. And he did. And I think Paul basically loved the truth. I don't think there's any doubt about it, and I'll prove it to you. When the Lord appeared to him on the Damascus Road, he told him to send into Damascus, and he'd be told what to do to be saved. Well, Paul went into the city of Damascus to receive the truth about how to be saved. And he's going to know that truth. And Ananias, the preacher, came to him to tell him what to do to be saved. He said, Brother Saul, why tarriest thou? Arise and be baptized and wash away thy sins, calling on the name of the Lord. Acts 22:16. Now that's the truth. Now does Paul love the truth enough to obey it? Or is he going to try to use maybe sophistry or use some kind of excuse not to do it? Well, he loved the truth enough that he obeyed it. Someone says, but what did he have to give up? Well, several things he had to give up. He had to give the religion of his father and mother. He said, I have verily lived in all good conscience before God and was exceedingly zealous toward the tradition of my fathers. I wasn't brought up this way. I wasn't taught this way. My mom and daddy didn't believe this way. But I see the truth and I'm going to accept it. And I'm not going to confer with flesh and blood. You show you love the truth when God tells you to do something, and you'll do it even though it's contrary to what you want to believe. You really didn't want to believe this. Or maybe you were brought up another way. But if you really love the truth. Now, I'm trying to define a term in the Bible. He says these people are going to hell because they don't love the truth. Now, some people might love some truth, but they don't love all the truth. See, they might love the truth that suits them, the part that suits them. You've got to love everything that God says if you love the truth. That has to do with your salvation. Some folks have been taught that they don't have to be baptized to be saved. And yet when they read the truth of God's word, he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. 1 Peter 3:21, the like figure whereunto even baptism doth also now save us. Bible says baptism saves us. Doesn't say baptism alone saves us. Now the truth about the matter is baptism does save you, but not baptism alone. Now I didn't say that. I didn't say baptism only would save you. So don't misrepresent what I said. But I said baptism saves you because that's what the Bible says. And I believe that because that's the truth. Someone said, but I wasn't brought up that way. And I wasn't taught that. But do you love the truth? Now, if you love the truth, I'll tell you what you're going to do. You're going to obey the truth. But if you don't love it, you're going to quibble. And vacillate about the truth when it's given to you. And I've had some folks do that. Then I've had other folks like Paul who say, well, I never did believe that, but that's the truth, and I'm going to do it. Now, that's a lover of truth. You know, you ask me the question, who is it that loves the truth? It's the person who will do what God says, regardless as to what his father and mother believe or what they've taught or family relationship. You love the truth. Once you know it, you love it. You love the truth. And if you don't, you're going to be damned. That's what the text says. Why are these people damned? He says, because they didn't love the truth. Question, do you love the truth? Really, brutally, honestly love the truth? And I'm not talking about the truth out in all these other areas. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the truth that has to do with your soul salvation. Do you really love it? Do you love it enough to defy your surroundings and your family? And Jesus said, whosoever loveth father and mother is not worthy of me. Do you love it more than you love your father and mother? Some folks don't. Some folks don't. And the reason I know they don't, one man told me, he said, I know that's what the Bible said, but if I do that, I condemn my father and mother. I said, then you love your father and mother more than you love the truth. Right? Right. That's the way it is. You cannot love anyone more than you love the truth. These people, listen, I want to go with the text again. Has it registered on you? These people are damned because they don't love the truth. Read it. That's what it says. That's the reason they're going to hell. Do you love the truth? Beyond anything on this earth, do you love the truth? And I'm talking about the truth that has to do with your salvation. I'm not talking about all truth. I'm talking about the truth about your salvation and what will take you to heaven. You've got to really love it. And I read that these people, in this text, it says in the next verse, and for this cause God will send them strong delusions that they believe a lie and be damned. How does God send these people strong delusions? One man commented and said it was sort of like a hallucination. I don't believe that means that God miraculously sends someone out here, something separate and apart from the laws of nature. I believe the context simply means that this is the fruit of the fact that they do not love the truth, and that's the sense in which they receive the strong delusions to believe a lie. If I could illustrate it, let's take the laws of nature. I don't believe that God miraculously sends rain or the sunshine or a tornado or a hurricane. I think he wound that up in the laws of nature. I think he gave us the laws of nature, and it's the laws of nature, which given by God, are going to cause it to rain some. We're going to have a few tornadoes. We're going to have some hurricanes. We're going to have various other things. But I don't believe it means that God miraculously sends that. He does it through the laws of nature. I think the way God sends you a strong delusion is through this attitude that you have of not loving the truth. That's how he sends you the strong delusions. And I believe that. I don't believe that it's something miraculous that God does to you when you don't love the truth, separate and apart from the known laws of nature. I don't believe that. But I believe that your very attitude leads you to believe a lie and be damned. And that's why it's dangerous. You see, if you don't love the truth, you're susceptible to following a lie. And if you're susceptible to following a lie, notice and you will believe this lie. And then as a result of this, you'll be damned. None of us want people to lie to us. And none of us really want to believe a lie, I guess, deep down. Now, some of us maybe have at times believed a falsehood. And sometimes we're deceived in other areas. I'm not talking about religious areas. But he says here, even in the spiritual realm, if you don't love the truth, you're going to be sent not only strong delusions by God through your concepts and through your ideas, as I've explained, but you're also going to believe a lie. And by believing a lie, he says, you'll be damned. You'll be damned. And I believe that's the consequence of not loving the truth, is people are led astray and they actually get to believing something that's false. They believe false doctrine. But they brought it on themselves, the delusion. They brought the delusion on themselves by not loving the truth as they should have. Sometimes it's hard to accept the truth. Sometimes it goes contrary to everything you've been taught and everything you believed and everything you love. But it is the truth, and if it's the truth, then you must obey it. I'm going to tell you briefly about a story, and this will have to be brief, over in the Old Testament, in 1 Kings, beginning about chapter 10 and going up to about chapter 13 there. And I'll try to paraphrase this briefly. But there was a division among the children of Israel between Jeroboam and Rehoboam. You remember, Rehoboam was the son of Solomon. Solomon was a wise man, very smart man, but his son wasn't that smart. You know, Solomon didn't run a brain factory, and he couldn't transfer his intelligence down to his son. And no one can do that. And Solomon, though he was smart, Rehoboam, when he became king, he went to the older men, the wise men, and he said, what should I do with the Israelites? Should I increase their burdens or lighten them? They said, you should lighten the burden. They said, the burdens are too heavy on the people, just too heavy. And he didn't like what he heard, so he went to the young men, and these younger men says, no, says, don't lighten them, make them harder, and says, tell those people out there, tell them, says, your fathers have chastised you with whips, but I'm going to chastise you with a scorpion. I'm going to give you a whipping with a scorpion. And so he listened to the young men, and he increased the burdens, and it caused so much furor that Israel divided. He split the log, kind of like someone who splits the church. And then we say, who split the church? Who did it? Did Rehoboam do it or did Jeroboam do it? Well, in a sense, they both had a part in it. Rehoboam used poor judgment, but he was the real king. Jeroboam pulled a group off up at Dan in Bethel. And they were the 10 tribes known as Israel. And they left Jerusalem, went up to Dan in Bethel, and he set up two idol gods, golden calves, and he says, this is idolatry. That's just as wrong as it could be. Just as wrong. Even though Rehoboam made some mistakes in judgment, Jeroboam did wrong by going up there and going into liberalism. He went completely into liberalism. You know, sometimes people will leave a congregation, and instead of going to a sound congregation, they go into liberalism. Well, that's what he did. They even go into something that's worse. He went up there and he set up two golden calves at Dan and Bethel, and he told the people, said, you don't need to go back to Jerusalem. Said, you worship these calves, and he's going to have a dedication service one day and burn incense to them. And when he got ready to have his dedication service, God spoke unto a young prophet and said, go up there and preach against that ungodly doctrine. Said, just stand up and do it. So this young prophet went up there, and just as old Jeroboam was getting ready to dedicate his golden calf, this young preacher stood up and he says, this is condemned by God. It's just as false and rotten as it can be, and it's all wrong. And when he preached against it, Jeroboam says, arrest that man. Catch that man. And when he did, his arm became stiff, and he couldn't get it back. God performed a miracle. And when he couldn't get his arm back, that scared him. And he then asked the young prophet, he said, would you beg the Lord to heal me? And he did, and the Lord healed him. And then he told the young man, he said, now you're my friend. He said, you were my enemy. He said, I'd like to take you to the royal house, and I'd like to give you a royal meal. And he said, I'm the king, and I have royalty. And says, I want you to come home with me. The young prophet said, I can't, because God told me the truth. And what the truth was, I can't eat with any of you folks up here. He told me not to do it. Well, the king had to accept it. He turned down royalty. He turned down a royal meal in a royal house. You know, I read about the king over there and Prince Charles. One day Prince Charles says, I'm going out to the royal yacht and I'm going to get in the royal yacht, and then I'm going to come back and get in the royal airplane. Everything belonging to the queen is royal. A royal yacht? That's what Prince Charles said. But anyway, this young prophet could have sat down to a fine meal, and I guess he's hungry. But he loved the truth. At least he demonstrated it this time. Well, he was on his way home, and there was an old prophet in this town, and I'll briefly talk about him. It'll have to be brief. This old prophet knew the truth, but he was a type of preacher that really wouldn't preach the truth, though he knew it. He sat at home during the dedication service and sent one of his boys went, but he didn't even go to the dedication service. He knew better. He knew what Jeroboam was doing was rotten and was ungodly. Just like some preachers in the church, they know what's wrong, but they don't have the intestinal fortitude to preach against it. And that old man sat at home. But when the boy told him about this young prophet crying out against it, he said, who was he? Well, he said, he's on his way home. He said, saddle my ass. I want to see him. He found that boy under an oak tree. And he said, I want you to come home with me. He said, I appreciate your intestinal fortitude and what you did today, that sermon you preached. He said, I can't go. God told me not to. But he said, I want to tell you, God told me it's all right for you to go. An angel of the Lord spoke to me and said, it's all right for you to go. And you know that boy believed that lie? He went home with that man. He ate the dinner, and God, through that old prophet, said, you're going to die. He didn't show the love. He should have said, I don't care what you say, an angel said to you. I love the truth, and I'm not going to believe your lie. But you know what happened? He got out the door and started down the road, and a lion leaped out from the bushes, grabbed him, knocked him to the ground, and I imagine he could hear that lion crushing his ribs and his throat. And he probably thought, I believed a lie and I'm damned. Neighbor, you don't want to believe a lie. And I've often thought what that young preacher thought when that lion grabbed him, and as that mouth, massive mouth, was crushing his ribs, which a lion has the power to do. Kill that young man. Well, there's more to the story. But I wanted to illustrate to you that you had better love the truth with all your heart and all your soul and all your might, regardless as to what man says. If you're here today and subject to the invitation, I hope you'll accept the truth and come to the Lord. Shall we stand as we sing our invitation song?